welcome to this week's episode of Nevada Backcountry, brought to you by Truck Envy and Out West Buildings. Like we do every Sunday, we're going to go over some news and then go over kind of relevant stuff going on in the archery world, hunting world in general. First, though, congratulations to TJ Sutherland from Sparks, Nevada. You won the Mountain Tough Plus package. Now, I commented on your page. I had no idea how to tag you. I don't know if your thing is set to private. I posted it on our page. So, TJ, if you are listening out there and I can match you up to the picture on your Facebook, you won. If anybody listening out there knows TJ from Sparks, have him get in touch with us. He can email us at nvbackcountry@evansbroadcast.com.
Actually,
Did he just message you?
TJ messaged us.
Okay.
So I was in the field and I did not look at my phone, and he messaged us a question mark on our Nevada Backcountry Facebook page.
Okay. Well, there
and
you go.
The beauty is his profile picture even represents the question mark. He's got that tilted head look like, what?
Perfect.
Yes. So we will get back to you, TJ, here real soon and get you some information and on how to collect your certificate.
Yeah, and they just released, here's some housekeeping stuff, they just released their preseason 2.0 fitness test. So if you have access to either a rowing machine, I'll call it the old school Airdyne bike thing, you can do that. And it's a fantastic way to gauge how fit you are right now.
Yeah.
And then I usually try to do it after the season, February-ish, and see where I'm at. But anyway, so now, NBHA stuff.
Yeah.
Open awards.
Yes. So we have our Bow Hunter of the Year applications. I think it's over now. I think it ended the end of March, if I remember correctly. We have a couple awards, but we wouldn't mind a few more applications. So if you are still interested, we would love a few more applications. I think we did not receive too many this year, but the Bow Hunter of the Year, and you can go on the NBHA website and check out the application. It's much smaller this year. It's not an 11-page mortgage document. It is a one-pager, and it is super simple. If you hunted in Nevada last year with a bow and harvested and had a great time, fill that out and get yourself a really cool belt buckle. We also have the Doc Holmes Award, which is the largest mule deer taken in the state of Nevada. That is open until April 30th, so here today it will be shutting down. But we will extend that out a little bit further because we have not received any applications for that particular award. You do need to have the animal scored and submitted to NBHA. This year, we'll have all of our state championships for the 2022 season. We'll be getting their awarded belt buckles.
Yeah. And yeah, you were just telling me you got a box full of those things to take out there.
Yes, I did. Got a whole box of them. Made sure all the names were spelt correctly.
And those things are cool, man. I'll tell you, I saw Pat Latimer's. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I went,
sweet.
Okay, that's, yeah.
Yeah, they're all handmade. Each one's handmade. It's not like it's a stamped Walmart-style belt buckle. They're all handcrafted.
Archery news. Now, bear tags. Still available in Oregon, over-the-counter.
Yeah.
Season runs through May 31st. Idaho, still available over-the-counter. Northern units, it runs to about June 15th. Units 7 and 9, which I'm not 100% sure where those, I think those are central Idaho somewhere. The season runs through July 31st.
Oh, wow. Did they extend that?
Yes.
Oh,
and
geez.
Now most of the southern units go through June 30th. So
now which unit's yours?
One, Panhandle
you're
up there.
The Panhandle,
We're going to hunt unit one, low odds proposition. It's rugged, vast, remote country.
Yeah, and you're going to complicate it a little bit by taking your recurve, your Hoyt Satori.
Oh, man, you're going to put me on the spot with that. I mentioned to David that I was behind the power curve on getting my rifle set up for this hunt. And I went, you know, I've been shooting my bow a ton this year. I shot all winter in league. I've been shooting these 3D things. Maybe I'll just take my bow. Now you're going to make me own it.
Oh, man. I think it would be so cool if you went up there and whacked one with a Satori.
It's a low probability hunt anyway, as far as success rate. Yeah.
Getting 30 yards from it's another one.
Yeah. I did set up. I finally got some limbs for that Hoyt Satori. I've got it set up and tuned. You might make me do it, Dave.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's not me. You got to think. Okay. You got to think Chandler and Christian and Tim for getting you getting you the limbs.
Hunting House was crucial on getting those limbs for me, getting the old ones warrantied. Yeah, they hooked me up big time with that.
Yeah,
so
that, I'm going to say it's their fault.
I owe it to them.
I'll take secondary, you know.
Oh, man, I can't believe you put me on the spot like that. Yeah. Now, if I do get my rifle together in time and I do go shoot one with a gun, it's going to be like a disappointing. It's like,
no, man. No, you don't have to tell anybody.
Lips are sealed.
Just keep it low key, man.
Let's see. Okay, another kind of high point for me anyway. This coyote contest bill died in the legislature, so contests are still allowed as a management tool for coyotes. And I would like to point out, I did a little research on the folks that proposed that bill. One from Las Vegas and went to Columbia University in New York City, proposing a bill to ban coyote killing contests. I just scratch my head and I go, oh, what in the hell do you know about hunting coyotes or predator management tools while you were walking around the vaunted halls of Columbia University? And same, the other person is originally from like Los Angeles, now lives in Las Vegas, and it's just like, knock it off. There. Rant out of the way.
Rant is gone. Yeah.
So that's dead.
Yeah, no, that one got kiboshed for the time being. I think they had to pass all the bills by like last Tuesday or this previous Tuesday.
Okay.
That was the deadline for any bills. Anything still sitting on the table was void. So,
okay.
You know, and you know, it is a tough one. Individuals that actually put on the contests don't exactly help themselves out. By some of the picture posts.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, that doesn't help when you've got some of that. I mean, that is kind of visually like, what are y'all thinking? But
It is what it is.
Coyote is a unprotected species in the state of Nevada. You don't need a hunting license. There's no season. There's nothing. It's an unprotected species. It's like going out and just completely lambasting black-tailed jackrabbits.
And that's not an arbitrary thing, or it's not without cause.
No.
It's due to the numbers of them and the fact that they need management like any other species. So I want to make that point clear that this isn't just something, you know, some commissioner or something has a grudge against coyotes and says, hey, let's kill them all. It's none of that. It takes surveys, it takes biological studies, and with the population numbers of coyotes, they just
Unprotected species. Yeah. I mean, the legislature and the commissions, wildlife commissions and county commissions and stuff, they don't just pull things out of their behinds and say, yep, this is our decision right here.
Right.
I mean, they go through their process. They go through it methodically. They have their staffers at the legislature. They go through, they get the proper information, they get the science-based information, and they make the best decision that they possibly can with the information that's in front of them at the time. That's it. That's end of story. That's just how it is.
On that note, let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk Redding.
Yeah.
We'll talk archery stuff. We didn't get to the new arrow thing. So stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you're anything like me, you've gotten the enough is enough speech from your significant other. Before you go out and do something foolish this season, get in touch with my guy, Irvin. He's got plenty of man cave options to protect those priceless mounts and might even help save your marriage along the way. Just go to outwestbuildings.com.
And we're back here on Nevada Backcountry. We are going to get ourselves into a little bit of arrow talk here in this segment. There is a big hype going on right now about 4mm, 5mm, or 6mm arrows. What are you shooting? There is a ton of talk on Archery Talk, on Lancaster, yep, on a bunch of the archery blogs. Archers are just going haywire about who is shooting what.
And we've talked about this a little bit before.
Yeah,
we've talked about it on the show, fat arrows and all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were talking about the 6mm because, you know, you start Googling things now and everything's like, oh, the 6mm hex, Easton hex carbons. Oh, the 6mm full metal jackets. And so you're just like, oh, man, what is going on? But with all of the Google searches I've done and talking to folks and blog conversations that I've had, still, it seems like the 5mm, which is your standard arrow, which was, yep, your standard carbon arrow, is still the meat and potatoes of the archery world.
Number one seller.
It's the number, yeah, one. People love it the most because it's tunability. They're just comfortable. Like you were saying earlier, you know, some of us older shooters, you just get stuck on. You're like, this is what I shoot. This is what I shoot. This is what I'm comfortable with. Why should I veer off of this?
Yeah.
The 4mm conversation right now, it's a new arrow out. People are digging it. A lot of the younger crowds are digging it. It's smaller. It's faster. It probably shoots a little bit better in winds because there's not as much surface area to grab onto. A couple of the drawbacks to a 4mm is you do need to use the deep six tips and broadheads. Those are getting hard to come by, the deep sixes.
Yeah.
As, yep, well as, you're very limited on the vein size you can use because
that's what you were saying.
You,
yeah,
know, such a small diameter arrow, you can't put a helical on your vein. No way.
Yeah.
Your veins would be crossing each other. And then it even knocks down what offset you can use. You can't use a 3%. You can't use a 2. If you're lucky, you might get away with a 1.5 if you've got clearance on your rest, depending on if you use a lizard tongue. If you're using a drop away, you're fine, but
you run out of surface area,
right,
basically.
You do. And then, right, and then, you know, you don't, you can only use like a 1.5 or 1.7 inch vein on there because there's not enough arrow to have your offset or something. So, you know, it has your gives and takes. I have not shot a 4mm yet. I don't really think I need to because my 5mm are shooting fantastic. They shoot great. My hyperspeeds, my ACGs, my pro comps, all of those, they shoot fantastic. My FMJs, I can shoot dots all day long with them. So,
but I think they're here to stay. I have shot them, and it's an arrow.
Yeah,
but I have that in everything: vehicles, firearms, bow stuff. I like the fact that I can go into an archery shop in middle of nowhere, Idaho, middle,
yes,
of nowhere, Wyoming, and I can pick up components for, or even just pick up fletched, you know, half dozen arrows of those Easton 5mm. I,
yes,
shoot the Axis and then the, yeah, Axis traditional for, yep, a recurve. I can find them everywhere. So for me, that's like, okay, done. Until, you know, the market moves past me and maybe 4mm becomes the new standard and I'm just antiquated.
Oh, we'll be long gone before that happens.
There's just
too much 5mm out there and too much 5mm,
yeah,
support.
Find it everywhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like I stated, you need the deep six components.
That's no thank you.
Jeez, that's like still driving around in a Daihatsu.
Good analogy.
Hey, I need to go to the parts store and get myself a Daihatsu alternator.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You might want to duct tape an old Ford Pinto in there.
It's called a bicycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go for it.
Enjoy.
On that note with the 4mm thing, I wanted to bring up with these super skinny arrows, and then this will kind of lead us into our chat about redding. When you're shooting that super skinny arrow with the fletchings on there, they will kick tail right. Well, they'll kick with the wind the back end of the arrow, because there's not enough surface on them to kind of move and drift the arrow. So you'll get some funky flight stuff with a crosswind with those small arrows.
Yeah, that is one thing they were talking about, that the flight pattern can be a little questionable if you have a breeze or something, because there isn't a lot of, there's more force on the tail end than the front end because there's, so like you're stating, less surface area.
Skinny, yeah.
Right, so they will tail out.
And I mean, that's longer shots, which, and why I bring this up to tie into our next thing here, Redding. We've talked a little bit about Redding, but I wanted to pick your brain. I know you shoot in a crosswind pretty regularly.
Yeah.
So there's the tie-in with skinnier arrows. Both David and I are going to shoot Redding this year. This is going to be your what year?
Like 11th or 12th year.
Okay. First year for me, never been, but I wanted to ask somebody who's been going for over a decade now, the hype around it. Everybody talks about the Redding shoot, the Western Classic trail shoot. It's the only archery shoot, as far as I know, that actually has a YouTube series dedicated to how to shoot it, tips and techniques for it.
Yeah.
So you've been, talk to me about the hype. Well, is it real?
It's real. It is real. I'm excited every year to go and shoot Redding, and my excitement has not waned at all.
Okay.
But a part of it is every year you want to beat your score. Staying up into the 1500s, top score for shooting a perfect round is 3 days shoot, 70 targets. Perfect round is a 1540 points.
Okay.
The record is held by Jesse Broadwater at 1539. The hype is, it's kind of hard to imagine. Like we were talking earlier.
Yeah.
I took my daughter to West Virginia for med school. And one of the first things I did when I got to Morgantown, West Virginia, was looked up archery shops. I decided I'm going to head out. I'm going to go check out some archery shops. First archery shop I walked into, talking to the gentleman, where are you from? I'm like, oh, Reno, Nevada. He's like, oh, is that near Redding?
That's his geographical benchmark.
That is his benchmark. Yeah. And I said, yeah, it's, you know, a couple hours out. And he's like, have you ever been to the Redding shoot? Yes, I have. So all the way out to the East Coast, it's like people's archery bucket list.
Come from all over.
Yeah. To participate at the Redding shoot. Everyone talks about the elk scene, canyon, golden bears across the canyon.
Right.
Bigfoot at 101 yards. There's just these iconic shots and people just are super jazzed about getting out there to do it. And for one, it's just a blast. You have just about every pro that's out there is participating.
Shows up. Yep.
You got Levi Morgan, you got Paige Pierce, you've got, on top of that, you have all of the professional factory shooters, the Hoyt shooters, the Matthews shooters, the Elite shooters, the Darton shooters. You've got them all. Everyone's there just in this humongous venue. And then you have all of the vendors that are there. Just about every archery company's out there promoting their stuff and selling their stuff.
Hey, this is going to be my first year. I'm excited. And I'd point out that Bigfoot target. I mean, just the weird stuff. You want to go down a rabbit hole, go to YouTube and type in how to shoot the Bigfoot target at Redding.
Oh my God.
And there's pages of videos dedicated to one target.
How to do it. Because the big thing is,
mind-blowing to me.
The big thing is to shoot a 22.
And that's good. I'm glad you brought that up. How is it scored? And when you say shoot a 22.
So you shoot two arrows at each target.
Okay.
Okay. The orange dot is an 11. And then there's,
gotcha.
Then there's another ring outside of the orange dot, which is the 10. And then you've got the animal.
Okay.
So
two arrows in an orange dot is a 22.
Yeah, each arrow is 11 points.
Okay. How big is the dot on the Bigfoot?
20. It's 20 millimeters.
Oh, man, you're going to make me convert to inches.
So it's about the size of a little bit bigger than like a large Folgers can. The bottom of a large Folgers can. It's a little bit bigger than that, I think.
Okay.
I think my measurements could be off too.
I
went to school during the failing of the metric system in American school systems.
Okay, so a sizable dot, but still we're talking about a 101-yard shot with a bow that's no joke. After the break, let's talk about your specific setup, David. We can go into some of the struggles I've been having with even getting my bow to shoot at that distance. Stay tuned after the break on Nevada Backcountry, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. It's finally that time of year again. I don't know about you, but my family and I are ready to hit the open road. Do a little shed hunting, maybe some rock hounding, even a little scouting. Just get out and away from civilization. Before I head for the outback of Nevada, I make sure my rig is as equipped as possible with accessories from Truck Envy. Andy and the guys at Truck Envy know just how hard the Big Empty can be on off-road vehicles, and they don't sell anything they wouldn't trust on their personal overlanding and off-road rigs. Whether you're headed for Knott Creek Reservoir, Diana's Punch Bowl, some remote ridges in the Jarbidge, or just towing the family fifth wheel to Gabs, get everything you need at Truck Envy in Reno. Just before the break there, David, I started getting into specific bow setups, tuning your bow for redding. What do you do differently for the redding shoot, if anything, and how do you set up your equipment for it?
Well, one thing is if it's windy or breezy outside, I always go out and practice because redding, I mean, you could pretty much bet there's going to be a breezy day.
Okay.
And some of these shots are, I mean, these are pretty long. Some of them are pretty long shots. You've got 70 yarders, a couple 80 yard shots, a couple 70s, quite a few 60s and 50s. So it's, you're throwing out there quite a distance. So you got to get out there and you got to practice in the wind.
Okay.
And you got to be open. You got to be out in the open. You know, you can't be like huddled between two buildings or something like that, you know, kind of hoping you can kind of break yourself a bit. You just got to be out there and just kind of figure out how to shoot in the wind.
Okay.
You know, there's how I get myself set up is I make sure that my numbers are dialed in to a few of the main targets that are at Redding. Like I will specifically shoot, obviously, 101 yards.
Right.
For Bigfoot. I will shoot 83 yards. I will shoot 88 yards. I'll shoot 76 yards. These are targets that are specific to animals that are on the course themselves.
And are kind of off yardages. Generally in archery, right, we tend to think in increments of 5 or 10 for pins. So for those listening, when David's talking about setting up his marks and his numbers on target archery scopes, there are little numbers you can click to a certain one, and he's talking about verifying that his what he has written down for his mark at a certain yardage is in fact correct,
right,
by shooting that in, yeah, real life.
Yeah, so the type of sight that we use, well, in the freestyle division, is a movable sight. It's almost like a slider, a movable sight, but it has clicks.
Right.
Each little click. And then there's a website or an app you can get called Archer's Mark. And you put in a bunch of parameters about your bow, like the arrow to peep height, the peep to scope height or distance, a bunch of different criteria. And then it creates this algorithm. And then you shoot in a distance of, you can shoot your 20-yard pin and then, like, say your 50 and put those solid numbers in, and then it'll start calculating everything out. I generally shoot 20 yards and then 60 yards, and I make sure that I'm putting, you know, 5 arrows in a circle the size of a soup can all the way out to 60.
Right.
And then it'll calculate your numbers all the way out to, you know, 150 yards or so. But then you need to go and verify some of those longer yardages and verify some of the really short yardages, because in Redding, you've got a couple 7-yarders, you've got a 3-yarder, you've got these really short shots that everyone always, people walk up and like, oh, dude, that's no big deal. 3 yards, who cares? I mean, I can shoot that all day long. And then they go up there and they miss.
Guilty.
And you're like,
you guys warned me and I still screwed it
and
up.
You still, yep, screwed the pooch.
Yep.
Yeah, because at 3 yards, you're not shooting. You're not putting your 20-yard pin on there and then dropping your 20-yard pin lower. You know, you're right, actually raising your 20-yard pin. You're shooting more like 50 yards at a 3-yard dot because your arrow comes off the rest and is going up. So people don't realize it. So anyway, there's a lot of little things to get ready for redding. Some other stuff that is, you know, not technically archery related, but just for your own well-being and for your own stamina, because the course is very long.
How long? So what are we talking, like 3-4 hours on course? Or?
You could definitely be on the course for 4, 5, 6 hours.
Oh, okay.
The thing is it's probably talking, you know, slowly walking along, and the each day is about 3 miles or so, or if not longer. So
food and water.
Food, definitely. And they have stations laid all out. I mean, they have figured it out. They have built a course that is like absolutely amazing.
Okay.
Got food stands, drink stands, the whole nine yards. In Reading, you can have it be torrentially raining on you in May, or a couple years back, you know, it was 102 degrees for the 3 days we were out there, and there were a line of ambulances out there because people were
heat stroking
out like crazy, and they were dropping left and right. So,
and it's a rain or shine event, I read.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if it's a torrential downpour.
It doesn't matter.
Shoot's going on.
We've been there with umbrellas, with it pouring to where you almost can't see a target beyond 30 yards because it's raining so hard. So you got to make sure you've got sunscreen. Make sure you've got, you know, sunglasses on so your eyes not getting fatigued and burnt. I mean, you got to make sure you're drinking water. You're carrying snacks. If you have children, shoot a different target than me. Oh, I had to throw that one
yeah,
out.
Yeah, stay away.
I had to toss that one out. But no, you've got to be prepared physically, mentally, and obviously
equipment-wise,
but...
And I hadn't thought about some of the, staying out there for that long, sunscreen, all that stuff. I hadn't thought about that. I've been so focused on my equipment, getting an arrow light enough to actually reach out there with a lower poundage target bow, making sure I actually went to new vanes on my arrows to make sure I had more clearance. You know,
right.
I've been doing all that. And somebody told me too that here's a good tip for those of you listening at home. If you're into archery and you've paper tuned your bow, I've always paper tuned it like 3 yards, or just, you know, the arrow's leaving my bow and it's shooting a perfect bullet hole at 3 yards. Somebody pointed out to me, step back to like 10 yards.
Yeah. You do a paper tune, you walk back. Yep.
And I started finding out, I've done walk back tuning where I'm shooting on the line.
Right.
But I shot paper at like 10 yards and I realized it is flying slightly funky. So I had to do a little more tweaking. I finally think I got a perfect tune on it. But I mean, it's this whole thing where it's the only time I've ever put this much effort into anything outside of hunting, realistically, getting this dialed for a tournament. Now watch, I'll show up, I'll shoot like crap, I'll never go
dude,
again.
You're gonna smoke it. You're gonna do great. You know,
but yeah, it's a whole different animal, man.
It is. I mean, Reading is a completely different beast, and once you go, you're either gonna be hooked or you'll never go again. I mean, it's kind of one or the other kind of a deal.
Okay. Well, man, it's a week away, so I might leave
Wednesday, you know? But yeah, make sure you've got clearance at your longer distance for sure. Don't rely on, if you're shooting freestyle, on your scope or on your dial, because you get out there to Bigfoot and you crank your scope down to the number that it tells you, and you look at it and you're like, oh, that's not going to work.
And you just had that happen recently, right?
I did. I went and did a tournament, and we had a 101-yard buffalo. I had not shot anything beyond about 85 yards. So when I set my dial, I quickly realized arrow's not going to clear the scope. This is not going to be good. So I've got to go back and figure out how this brand new bow is not clearing at 101 yards. So I may have had a measurement incorrect. I may have done something wrong.
You and I are in the same boat. I've still got a little bit of tinkering. Let me put you on the spot.
Right.
Targets you dread at Reading.
Oh, man. Bigfoot. I've been there 11 times, and I have yet to shoot a 22 on Bigfoot. I have 21'd him probably 10 out of the 11 times.
Okay.
21'd him, not 22'd him. So he is kind of my nemesis. He's like my cow elk.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
What else?
Another one I dread, if it's breezy out, I would say I dread the golden bears.
That's across the canyon,
that is,
right?
You're shooting across the canyon, and if it's a windy day, you can literally stand behind people as they shoot and just watch their arrows just completely start fishtailing. So,
that one comes up a lot. I've heard that before,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that one's a tough one. But
now give me a third. Give me top three. So Bigfoot, bears, and?
I'm trying to think my third toughest or most dreaded shot. I would have to say that darn 3-yard shot, because my first arrow every year, I'm nervous till I shoot that first arrow and drop the arrow in the center of the orange. I'm just a wreck.
Okay.
And then the second arrow, I'm like, oh, dude, totally got this.
But the first shot on it.
You know, because the target's pretty small.
Oh, yeah.
So if you shoot a little high or a little low, they're usually butterflies or a weasel. You're either missing the target or you might squeeze out an 8.
Flip side of that. Give me your top 3 favorite targets.
Favorite targets?
Yeah.
My favorite targets would be the elk scene.
Okay.
The golden bears. I love shooting the golden bears.
So dreaded and favorite.
Yes.
Made both lists.
It
okay.
depends on if it's windy. If it's breezy, they're dreaded. But if it's a halfway decent day.
Situation dependent. Okay.
Yeah, I just love shooting those bears. The elk scene. And I'd have to say target number 4, the bison, the downhill.
What's the yardage on that?
It's either 60, I think it's 63 yards.
Long enough to enjoy the arrow flight?
Yeah, and it's downhill, so it's you're shooting down. So it's kind of a neat shot.
Yeah, very cool.
Kind of a neat shot.
For those listening right now, you can go to the website and you can actually look at a trail map, and it has, they post the yardages, the targets, all that stuff. Hey, thanks for staying tuned during the break. Before we launch into the fourth and final segment on quotas, commission meeting, that kind of stuff, wanted to bring up a couple things. David and I got chatting off air during the break, and if you're like me, man, this time of year, I want to be out in the mountains doing stuff. The weather is great finally, but I wanted to bring up a couple things I've seen, which is, man, the snow conditions right now are, I won't call them like dangerous, but it is teetering on that unsafe. I brought up a couple things. There are plenty of lingering cornices. I won't go into the whole what that is and everything. It's basically overhanging snow along ridge lines, but there's stuff like that with these melt and freeze cycles we're going through, where it's warm all day, the snow starts to melt, and then it freezes again overnight. The snow conditions out in the mountains aren't the best right now. So if you're out in the mountains, out exploring right now, be safe. On that note, David, you were just out doing a survey or something?
Yeah, I was out near the Walker River doing some work out there. And,
okay.
You know, there's some trails there that are really popular. People love hiking them, especially as it starts getting warm and really nice out. These are starting to get water over them. The river up there is absolutely screaming. I don't know what...
You said it's almost at road level.
In some cases, it is at road level, and there are a couple dirt roads out there and trails that I've been on that are now have water on them, sitting water. And, you know, this weekend, being in the mid to upper 80s, I could guarantee you those levels are going to be going up. That little section going through Wilson Canyon out there in Mason Valley.
Yeah, it was closed for a long time with that rock slide.
But now the river is ripping through Mason Valley and Yerington. You get down into the Truckee is starting to hum along right now. So there's a lot of trails walking along the edge of that. Just be really careful. If you're hiking around with your kids and stuff, just keep an eye on them, because those currents will just suck them in like a magnet.
I don't want to make this sound like a doom and gloom.
Right,
hey, don't go outside. Because
right.
man,
don't go outside. Stay inside.
I told you when I woke up, a couple weeks ago or whatever it was, I woke up and there was like 2 inches of snow in my yard.
Yeah, last Tuesday.
Yeah, I was about ready to start eating light bulbs. I was so miserable seeing that. So look, I get it, man. If it's warm and it's nice out, I want to be out in the mountains. I want to be out on the water. But it's that weird transition time right now where it can be unsafe. So this isn't a don't go out. This is a just be smart.
Yeah.
Now, quotas.
Now, on to the next.
We need some transition music. Well, no, Armstrong and Getty used the Gladys on the harp for the going down memory lane thing.
Oh yeah.
We got to come up with something
we
like
need
that.
Something cool like that. Yes, quotas. So we have coming up here May 5th and 6th, we have the Wildlife Commission meeting, the annual meeting here in Reno that is going to be discussing the quota setting for the 2023 hunting season. So Nevada Department of Wildlife's biologists have already met, and the game biologists have already developed their recommendations for quotas for the 2023 season. The conditions, after all of the survey work that they've done, all their flights and all their observations throughout the year, and they have created recommendations to take to the commission. It'll be a very long meeting. Some of the ones that have been coming up and people have been asking about and really concerned about is like, hey, what's, you know, with this winter we had, like, what's going on with the deer? What do we think's going to happen deer-wise?
And you forewarned me. The quota is probably not going to be good for deer, or it's going to be lower, you think?
Yeah, most likely it's going to come down some. The deer definitely took a bit of a hit.
Okay.
The more mature, healthier deer probably did okay during this winter. Deer and elk, they figured out a way how to survive. They've been surviving these nasty winters.
Yeah, if overall herd numbers go down, then there probably won't be as many tags.
Right. Yeah. There's not going to necessarily be a need because the carrying capacity is not going to warrant those tags to be taken. I would assume that the elk are probably going to be pretty darn stable. They can handle it a little bit better. There have been some sheep issues. Seems to be every year, sheep in certain areas.
Pneumonia issues?
I'm not entirely sure. What some of the issues may be. Pronghorn, that could be a hit or miss. I wouldn't doubt if you see pronghorn shorter than ears getting a little boost in it.
Okay.
But, you know, the commission meeting is open to the public. Have nothing better to do on a Saturday and Sunday and want to go in and listen to what the process is, because that is a big question. People are always wondering, how does everyone come up with these numbers? What is in 10 tags in this area? How does that come to be?
Yeah, we were talking about this. You start, some of these people, you get into like full-blown flat earth, chemtrails, whatever conspiracy theory stuff with these tag quotas. And at the end of the day, it's like, look, this is not arbitrary stuff. I say it time and time again.
The field biologists for the Department of Wildlife that are out there, they're out there year-round watching the habitat, seeing what the carrying capacity is for certain mountain ranges, you know, what's the food source look like? You know, it's constant year round. They're not just throwing things at a dartboard and going, yeah, let's do that this year. Like I said, those recommendations go to the Wildlife Commission, and then the Wildlife Commission makes the final decision on what that quota will be for that particular hunt unit and for that particular species.
Hey, I'd encourage people, go to the commission meeting. Yeah, you'll see some of this stuff.
It's really cool. You can get online. You can check out what the agenda is. How it kind of runs is you've got the Department of Wildlife provides their recommendations to the commission, Wildlife Commission. Then you have the county advisory boards will provide their recommendations to the commission. And then the general public have an opportunity to go up and state their concerns or their, you know, whatever it is that they feel that they need to discuss and bring up to the commission in relation to what's being talked about. You can't go up there and just start talking about, you know, something
your
that's
Aunt
not
Kathy's,
on the agenda.
Hemorrhoids.
Farm. Yeah, you know. So as long as it relates to what's on the agenda, you can go up there, and then as a general public, you can go up there and provide your input.
As the Nevada Bow Hunters Association president, anything of concern coming up in this meeting? Is there anything you'd like to see accomplished?
I would like to see archers maintain the tags that we have. I would not mind seeing some increased tags for archers in a couple areas. I feel that some of these areas are warranted, but, you know, I'd have to write some stuff up and propose that. But I'm just hoping that archers do not lose any more tags than what we have in the last few years. It kind of sucks that we do, but it's a process. But that's what I'm hoping to get out of this, and that we all have an opportunity to get out in the field and and get some shooting in.
I want to ask you real quick before we wrap up the show here. Man, an hour flies by.
Dude, it's screaming.
But we talked before about the 90% let off thing.
Yes.
With bows. Is that on the docket for this meeting, or is that dealt with somewhere else?
That will be dealt with elsewhere. So it was put on, the governor had asked for agencies to go through all the regulations and clean it up, get rid of some stuff. That was placed on that to be part of the cleanup, but it was pulled out because it was only a part of a full regulation. And I think they were looking for full regulations.
Okay. So as of right now,
it is going to be going back to the Department of Wildlife. They're looking to move it forward so that the 90% let off, or I'm sorry, that's the regulations 80% let off.
As of right now,
the Nevada Bow Hunters Association is looking to have that completely removed.
Okay.
Like, no let off requirements whatsoever. There's only one other state, Idaho, that still has that regulation on their books, and they are actually looking to have it removed. Most of the other Western states have had it removed completely now because
everything comes at 90. Almost everything comes at 90% now.
Exactly. And, you know, some of the new bows you can adjust in the field from 65 to 90% let off. You can adjust it with an Allen set.
So, anyway,
that will not be on this agenda item or agenda. So it still has to be proposed, read, then the commission has to read, and then they can bring it back for a vote. So it could be two or three meetings in.
On that note, I'm going to pour one out for the good guys here momentarily on the coyote contest bill. We won that one. Good job, hunters. Now, David, let's get out of here.
It's Sunday. It's Sunday. It's 80-something degrees out. I want to go on a hike, and I'm going to shoot my bow.
Yeah, amen. Me too.
All right.
Hey, thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks to Truck Envy for sponsoring Out West Buildings. Same thing. Coming up here after the break, Tom Gresham is here to talk all things guns on Gun Talk, 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk.